Which is what we're talking about. I mean, just be attentive, be aware, and try not to interfere with whatever you're watching. Your job is just to know without getting involved. Because you find out in life that when you get involved with things, you tend to always mess them up. And a lot of times it's not your business. Did I tell the little anecdote about being a visitor, not an owner, so far in this retreat? Okay, you're all sort of not responding, so it must mean I haven't told it. That was, I think I told this over in Malaysia before I came over here, that this was a very little good anecdote to understand just what meditation is and how to find some peace. Especially when you have still many problems thinking about your husband and his operation or the food or all this other stuff which we think about. Now, you all know that I have many duties as a monk. You see the big monastery over there with 24 monks this year, and that's more than enough for any sort of senior monk to look after. But we've also got this place over here, so you know, when I go over to a monastery, now I'm doing monastery work there in the evenings and coming over here during the daytime. And yesterday, you know, supporting one of our supporters by blessing their restaurant. These are all the works which we have to do. And we've also got Big Dhammasala Monastery. As well as that, I'm the spiritual advisor of the Buddhist Society of Victoria. And even last night, the monk there, Jagannatha, he was calling me up on some business or whatever about their new land and how they're going to do it. And then I've also got Buddhist fellowship things to work out and going off to many other places. And there's also Santi Monastery over in Sydney, which, you know, speaks to a lot of turmoil, and I'm trying to get that together. There's so much work which I do. And it got so bad a few years ago. I was working on the weekend in our city centre. That's the other thing I've got to look out for in Nolomoa. Working so hard. Every Friday afternoon you go there, you know, catch up with any admin work, any problems with the committee or that place, and teach and teach and teach until Sunday afternoon, and then come back here, and then from Monday to Friday just working at Bodhinyana or here. And it was such hard work. And then people like yourselves will come and visit Bodhinyana Monastery, as many of you have already. And you say, it's such a peaceful monastery. It's so beautiful and serene. And I would say, what? This is my place of work. There's lots of stuff which I have to do here. Can't you see all the things which need to be done? What do you mean it's beautiful? This is my work camp. And of course I realized that it was me who was wrong. So I was just seeing it, seeing the monastery in which I live, with the eyes of an owner. And I decided to pretend once a week, usually on a Monday morning, to pretend for 2 hours to be a visitor in the monastery which I run. So I could see it as you would see it. So I could walk over there with not a care in the world, nothing to do. And so that Monday morning, I'd walk there, and if a lay person came and said, oh, can I ask you a question on meditation? I'd say, no, sorry, I'm a visitor. Go and see the abbot, wherever he is. And if there was some gutter which was leaking, and they'd say, Ajahn Brahm, the gutter's leaking. None of my business, I'm a visitor. Someone would call about troubles over in the Buddhist fellowship. Sorry, none of my business, I'm visiting today. So for 2 hours every week, I would pretend to be a visitor to the place where I lived. And the whole attitude and perception changed totally. And I could agree with every one of you today, it was a beautiful, peaceful place. That means I could rest. And obviously from that nice strategy, you could extend that, you know, to your body, to your meditation. If you're an owner of your body, then you've got to worry about your health, worry about your cough, worry about your cholesterol, worry about your diabetes, worry about this ache, this pain. But imagine you're a visitor. None of my problems. I'm only visiting this body for about 60, 70 years, that's all. When you're a visitor, not an owner, the whole perception changes. If you go and visit somebody else's house, if they invite you over for dinner, how many of you, when you're invited to dinner to a friend's house, wash up for them afterwards? Say, I'll wash the dishes for you. You never do that. It's not your house. If you go over to somebody's house, do you vacuum the carpets for them? No, this is your visitor. It's not your job. Which means that when you have the attitude of a visitor, it's much easier to be content and leave things alone. It's none of my business. Precisely. That was none of my business. I'm just visiting this morning. I'm not the teacher today. If I was the owner, like a policeman, I would say, arrest that girl, making a noise during my talk. That's what happens when you're an owner. You tend to control, get involved, and you miss the peace, the stillness, and the beauty. So with your body, you can pretend, okay, you know, I've got to look after the body later on, I've got to feed it, take it to the toilet, and look after its health, exercise it. But right now, when you're meditating, I'm going to be a visitor to my body, not an owner. So you can enjoy it as it is. It doesn't have to be perfect, because you're only visiting for 1 hour. And the same with your meditation. If it's my meditation, you're in big trouble because it's awful. But if it's somebody else's meditation, I'm just visiting for 1 hour, I'm just visiting my mind, then you find you can appreciate its beauty. As an owner, there's always faults. As an owner, there's always things to fix up. As an owner, there's always duties to be done. But as a visitor, you can just enjoy the place, eat the food, somebody else will wash up, somebody else will fix up the gutters and answer all the questions. Because you're only a visitor. Now this is just the perception which we have to change our meditation. Don't think, it's my meditation. I better get my mind still. I better be able to watch the breath. I better be able to get a liberty. It's my meditation. That's the problem. Just visiting. Not my problem. Which means then you can let it go. And you can learn this beautiful contentment. So those Monday mornings when I would be a visitor to the monastery where I lived, I could be so content. And the amazing thing was, it was like the two bad bricks simile. Once I was an owner, you always see the two bad bricks and the faults, the things which are wrong. But as a visitor, you just see the whole wall. It's nice, it's beautiful. Is China Grove a beautiful place? Not if you're an owner. There's so much stuff which still needs to be done here. I can see it. You asked Dania, I said, oh, there's so much work here. But as a visitor, it's beautiful. When you go back home, how about trying that little practice? Pretend once a week for 2 hours to be a visitor to the house where you live. There's dishes dirty in the sink, there is dirt all over the carpet, cockroaches running over things. Not my problem. I'm only a visitor. It won't go that bad. But it means you don't have to be such a control freak and just clean it all up and do everything right now. Which means you learn how to relax and let go for a couple of hours. Now, don't go home and say, I'm going to be a visitor for the whole year. Every now and again. So what that really does, it teaches you how to be content without having to have it all perfect. The trouble is, of course, with meditation, we want to make our meditation perfect. That is not the way to gain jhanas. The only way to find peace in life and in meditation is within perfection, imperfection. Even though you're restless, you're tired, your mindfulness is all over the place, this is good enough. You learn, as we chant in the morning, to be contented and easily satisfied. There's a wonderful little teaching there, to be easily satisfied with your own meditation. Which is why many years ago I coined the phrase, which goes against modern business teachings, lower your expectations if you want to be successful in life. Because people always thought you should raise your expectations. If you want to achieve, raise your expectations. Aim high. Even if you don't reach your goal, because you aim high, you'll get higher than you would have done otherwise. And that was one of the reasons why things like Lehman Brothers happened, why there's a global credit crunch. Companies aim far too high. The expectations were unreasonable. People were asked to work and complete projects which were impossible because our expectations were far too high. So these days, I tell people, lower your expectations. And that's one of the other things which has got onto Harvard Business School blog. There's somebody who listens to my talks in Harvard, and they put all the best teachings on the blog, but they don't acknowledge where they came from. Who cares? So that works actually in business. You lower your expectations to what is something reasonable. You reach that goal, and then you can go to the next goal. But lower your expectations first. And especially lower your expectations of your husband and your wife. You'll have a much happier marriage. We have so high expectations of each other, which is why we get so stressed out. Husband, you shouldn't be like this. And I've done such a lot of marriage counselling in my years. And I always say, I don't know why they come to me as a marriage counsellor, because I've never been married. The only reason they come to monks for marriage counselling is because we're cheap. It's great value for money. We don't charge. But so I know husbands. Many, many women have told me what they're like. And husbands have told me what wives are like. And it's something I've discovered over all those years of listening. All husbands, they're the same. Don't ever think you've got a defective model. They're all defective. The same with the girls as well, they're all the same. That's why I sometimes say to people, the engine of a woman is the same, the chassis is sometimes different. Some have got a Ferrari chassis, someone's got an old Trabant, that old car they used to fix up in Soviet Russia. But the engine is the same, okay. So lower your expectations and you'll be far happier in life. So lower your expectations of your meditation too. And if you lower your expectations, you don't expect to get fourth jhana by Thursday. You don't expect to sort of... People are so crazy. And they think, okay, we come in here, let's get jhana over so I don't have to come back again. Because get this out of the way so I've got many other things to do in life. And I get enlightenment finished and then I can go on to the next stage. You're missing the point. One of what Ajahn Chah said to us all, and it's again one of those very key teachings of meditation and Buddhism. He said, you meditate to let go of things, not to attain things. Very brilliant teaching, very short, but for many people it changes the whole attitude to what they're doing here. You're not meditating to attain things, to get jhana, to get nimittas, to get psychic powers, to get sort of be able to fly through the air, get enlightenment. You're not doing it to attain things. You're meditating to let go of things, to see how free you can be, not how many more attainments and certificates you could get. So understanding that, we learn how to just lower our expectations. And in meditation, we lower our expectations to the very bottom, until there's no expectations at all. You allow yourself to be totally as you are. The stupid mind, always thinking stupid thoughts, falling asleep when you're supposed to be meditating, not being able to go to sleep when you go to bed at night. Isn't that crazy? You come in here, you fall asleep. You go into bed, I'm going to sleep now, and you're wide awake. So that's you. So, you know, just be you, lower your expectations. And then you find you are contented and easily satisfied. You're sitting here with a stupid mind. Okay, I'm happy to be here with you. You're not the sort of mind I expected for meditation. I'm not the sort of mind which, you know, people describe in the books like happiness through meditation. It's just my mind. This is just what it's like. So be contented with it. Let it be. And then all those stages of meditation, then they start to happen all by themselves. I've already given the simile of Ajahn Chah sitting under the mango tree doing absolutely nothing, being totally still, no expectation, not expecting the fruit to fall. He's just holding out his hand, and then fruits fall. If you expect it to fall, it will never fall. Expectations are not being still. You're watching in the future, waiting for something to happen. You're tense. You're not still. So we don't have expectations. We have the opposite. The opposite of expectation is inspection. We're inspecting, looking in, see what's going on. And that's all we're doing. Contented, easily satisfied. Otherwise known as stopping, restraining, giving up. The stopping story, which I invented, which is a really good one, was many of you heard these stories before, but they're really good ones. The donkey and the carrot. Now, we're talking here to many people from Asia, so carrots don't really sort of mean very much to you. But durian does. I remember when you used to have the Buddhist Fellowship in Geylang, and used to go and give talks in the city and come back, and there was this huge, you know, just on that main street through Geylang, this huge durian store. Now that's all they did, stole durians. And it doesn't matter what time of the night I came back, because sometimes you go and give a talk at the media center on the radio, come back at 2 o'clock or 3 o'clock, there was always somebody eating durian there. I just couldn't believe how much you like that stinky stuff. So, there's a Singaporean donkey. And you can't get donkeys to pull anything by hitting them. They are so stubborn. So instead, you tie the stick to the donkey's back, front of the stick, 2 foot in front of the donkey's head, on the end of the stick a string, and on the end of the string, a piece of durian. And Singapore donkey likes durian. He won't pull anything because it's being hit, but it sees the durian in front of it, and it'll move towards it. And the durian will move away, because the durian's on the end of the string on the stick, which is tied to the donkey. And even if the donkey runs, still the durian is about 2 foot in front of the donkey's mouth. Can never catch it. It's almost there, but you can't really get it. Because the durian's on the end of the string, on the end of the stick, tied to the donkey's back. Can you understand that simile? So much of what you have been striving for in life, a great relationship, you know, happiness, contentment, fulfillment in your career, sometimes it's almost like 2 foot in front of you, it's in reach. You know, fulfillment, real happiness, the perfect relationship, the most wonderful day, even the perfect lunch. Almost there. Within reach. And then you go towards it, and it moves away from you. And that's so true in meditation as well. So much in meditation, even some people have seen limiters. They're over there, they move towards it and it goes. Peace, happiness, stillness, the whole works are like that. So how do we solve that problem? And you know, because I was a physicist before I was a monk, it's easy to find out how donkeys catch the durian. And many of you know that story. First of all, the donkey has to run like hell after the durian, as fast as it can. Now for all of you, you've been running fast enough already, you don't have to do that anymore. But then the donkey stops. Stops racing after anything. Stops all craving, all desires, all running after breath, nimittas, jhanas. Stop running after everything. And what happens? The durian moves further away. When we let go in meditation, usually any mindfulness, any peace goes further away as you fall asleep. That is common. The durian is going further away. But just carry on letting go, not doing anything. And soon that durian is further than it's ever been before, 4 foot or more away from the donkey's mouth. But of course that's as far as it goes. And then the nice part of meditation starts to happen. The durian comes towards you. So you're sitting here doing nothing. And all these stages you read about, which I explain, present moment awareness, just there. And as the durian comes closer, the mind is silent. You don't have to do anything, it's just there. You didn't ask it to be silent, it was just silent. And then you feel its beautiful breath. It's so delicious, I never did anything. It just came to me. As the durian comes closer and closer, beautiful nimittas come up. Wow, I've got nimittas too. As the durian comes closer and closer. And as I often say, the last thing you should remember to catch the durian is compassion, kindness. The donkey thinks, the door of my mouth is open to you, durian. To let the durian come in. You do need that kindness. That is why Ajahn Chah said, sit still under the mango tree and open up. He said the hand, but he meant the heart. Open up the heart to receive whatever falls. And that is the trick of meditation. It's not asking or expecting anything. Because if you're expecting anything, you'll always be running after something. And it means the durian never comes to you. You have to stop and be still. To be contented and easily satisfied. Now it's such a difficult thing for people to do because you've never done that before. Maybe you did when you were young, when you were a kid. You were sitting there at school, perfectly content, and the teacher asked you, what do you think about this math problem? And your mind was blank and you got punished for that. You could have been a great meditator. I used to tell this story also once a year. One of the great teachers in Thailand many years ago, his story was really amazing. Because in that time, this was, I don't know, 50, 60 years ago in the northeast of Thailand, I always forget the monk's name, but he was a very famous teacher, but the story is so memorable. In those days, you'd only have 4 years of school, the grade 1, 2, 3, 4, just basic to teach you how to read and write and do simple arithmetic. That's all was needed if you're going to be a farmer. So anyway, he went into grade 1. After 9 or 10 months in grade 1, at the end of the year, the school teacher had to fail him. He wasn't clever enough to go into grade 2. So all his friends advanced and he had to repeat grade 1. I mean, that's very, very difficult to do in Singapore or Australia or anywhere, to fail grade 1. So he had another year in grade 1. And after the second year, still, with the best will in the world, the teacher could not pass him. So he had to repeat grade 1 for a third year. And after 3 years in grade one, still there's no way he could advance. So he couldn't, he was thrown out of school. And even his parents thought he'd be hopeless as a rice farmer. He wouldn't know one end of a water buffalo from the other. So what do you do with a person like that, who's so stupid, fails grade one 3 times? In Thailand, it's obvious. You make them a monk. But not all monks fail grade one 3 times. And so they sent him into the local village monastery. And one good thing about all those monasteries, the monks were always incredibly kind and compassionate and patient. So the head monk there was so patient with this young man, would spend hours and days trying to teach him something as simple as Namo Tassa. He'd get to Na and then Mo, and say, what was the first one again? He was really, really basic. And after a couple of years in the village monastery, the abbot got so frustrated, he had to get rid of him, and so sent him to the last resort, which was the forest monastery, the places where I went. The last resort for the incompetent. And when the teacher gave him a simple meditation instruction, like watch the breath, he had no trouble whatsoever. He could spend hours watching the breath because he had such a simple mind. And he sort of soon got into jhanas, he became an arahat. And he said the only way he could do the chanting, because you know all the monks have to do chanting, in this life his mind was too simple to remember the chanting. But he actually recalled a previous life when he'd been a monk. And in that life, you know, he could learn the chanting. So whenever he had to do the chanting, he literally connected with that previous life to get the chanting so he could chant. In this life he couldn't do it at all. And there's an amazing little story there. So, if any of you are dull, if you did finish university, great! You have got the advantage over everybody else. Or if you've got a kid in Singapore who's having difficulty at school, who won't pass the exams, that could be the great monk of the future for Singapore. Don't spoil him. Keep him stupid. He could be very peaceful. But that whole story was telling me that sometimes that, you know, when we think too much, we're actually going in the wrong direction for meditation. Yeah, outside in the world it works, but when you're meditating, try and keep it very simple. So just be content. And from contentment upon contentment upon contentment, you get incredibly peaceful. In order to emphasize that point, I often ask people to recall the most happy, contented experience of their life so far. A time, maybe at home on holiday, I don't know where it was, when you were alone or with somebody, and you had this feeling you didn't want to be in any other place with any other person in the whole world. That this little moment was totally perfect, nothing was missing. You were totally contented. Everyone's had moments like that somewhere. How peaceful and blissful that was. You didn't need anything in the world, you didn't want anything more. Just being by this lake or in the mountains or just at home, just with the people you love. Totally content, nothing was missing. Now you know what it feels like to be free from desire, totally contented. That's what we are recreating in meditation. Every time you want a jhana or you want a nimitta or you want your mind to settle down, if you want it to settle down, you're not content anymore. You want something else. Remember what I told you in the first talk? Maybe you didn't hear it because the PA system was not so good that first night. The two types of meditation. Second Noble Truth meditation and Third Noble Truth meditation. Second Noble Truth is when you want, you create suffering. Even wanting jhanas creates suffering. That's Second Noble Truth meditation. So So if anyone is frustrated, disappointed, they haven't achieved what they come here to achieve and there's only a few days left, that's because you've been doing Second Noble Truth Meditation. You've wanted, you've had your goals, trying to attain things. That's not what Ajahn Chah said. He said, be meditating to let go. To let go of all your goals, trying to attain things, trying to get things, and replacing that with contentment. Just being happy to be here, wherever this happens to be. You're stopping, and the durian comes to you. And that's what happens, and that's the amazing experience of meditation. Sometimes people say, I can't do meditation, I've been trying this, I just don't get it. You know, I'm honest with everybody, I'm a monk, I can't tell lies. I don't get meditation either. I, Ajahn Brahm, I admit now, his roundness, I cannot meditate. I cannot get jhanas. I cannot get peaceful. I have to get out of the way first of all. Ajahn Brahm has to vanish. And when I vanish, then all those things happen. You know, I just sit here. Every time I try to meditate, it doesn't work. I say, okay, I'm not going to try anymore. I'm just going to be here. I'm just content. Just content being here. And then all those durians come to me. It just comes. And that is a great, amazing experience of meditation. Just like when you were so content, and you may have not just won the lottery, you may have still had lots of debts and lots of problems, even health problems. When you had that beautiful experience of being so content. But for a few moments in your life, you let go of all of your wants, all of your goals and all the things you wanted to attain in life. And you were just maybe with, you know, a lover or just by yourself in a peaceful part of the world. And you're just so happy. Can you get the connection why you were happy there? Not because you had everything you wanted, but because you didn't want anything in the first place. You're just happy to be here. This is why we call it the two freedoms in life. The freedom of desire and the freedom from desire. The freedom of desire is having enough money, enough power, psychic powers or whatever, to get whatever you want when you want it. That's called the freedom of desire. Again, people tell me that, you know, in the TVs, how many channels on Foxtel? I think is there 100 or 50 or 60 or something? But say they've got all these channels on the Foxtel, and people tell me they go surfing and they go there, 60 channels, nothing's on. Nothing's on. There's all this entertainment on there. You go into the refrigerator, which is, you know, things are falling out when you open the door. Nothing to eat. Look in the books, nothing to read. It's amazing just how bored people are, even though everything's there. Because that's what happens when you have the freedom of desire. All these desires at your fingertips, nothing ever satisfies you. But the freedom from desire is I don't need anything. I'm just happy with what I've got. When there's no desire at all in you, no want, nothing missing, nowhere to go, nothing to become, nothing to change. You don't have to improve yourself anymore. You're quite okay as you are. You've opened the door of your heart to yourself. No matter what you are, you've allowed yourself in. I'm perfect as I am. This is who I am. I'm not going to change. You're contented. You're not trying to get enlightened anymore. You've given up. It's a hopeless task. You've given up trying to get jhanas. I'm not even close to jhanas. You know, how many days have we been here now? What day is it today? Tuesday. So you've been here 4 days, halfway. Are you halfway to jhana yet? I've not even started. I want my money back. So, you can see what the problem is there. See if you can let go of all wanting. Totally give up. You're hopeless. You can't do it. I'm just, no way, I'm just going to enjoy the next few days. Just be content. Then you have a chance of getting the jhanas and everything else. You sit down, just for the sake of sitting down, contented, as an act of generosity.
to the Buddha. You know what generosity is? Giving, expecting nothing back in return. In Jhana Grove, have you seen any signs on the walls? Who offered this hall? Who gave how much? You see that in some temples, especially in Singapore. You know, they have Claire Lowe gave so much. Just because she's sitting in the front. We don't have that in there because, you know, I sort of, that's not generosity. That's buying advertising rights for your ego. Claire Lowe Hall. She didn't give this hall anyway. I don't know what he gave. Did he give anything? I don't know. Who cares? She gave her time. So the point is that when you give, you never expect to receive anything back in return at all. You know, once I gave a talk on a Friday night in Perth, and I said, you know, that one of the greatest acts of generosity would be if you just put a blank check in the donation box and let me fill in the amount. And someone did that. It's amazing. This somebody has such faith and such generosity, put in a blank check. So you put in however much you want, Ajahn Brahm. You know what I did? I sort of gave it back to him and said, frame it and put it on your wall. What a beautiful act of generosity that was. And trust also. This is beautiful stuff. It's inspiring stuff. But be careful, if you do a blank check to somebody, they'll put 10 million in and you'll be bankrupt. You've got to know who you're giving these things to. So, you know, I'd always give it back. But the nice point was, he never expected anything back in return. Which was, that's a beautiful part. Now, how does that go with meditation? You've given 9 days or 8 days to Jhana Grove. Are you expecting something back in return? Yes, you are. I want to get meditation. I want to advance. I want to get something. That's not real giving. That's not letting go. So your job in meditation is give your time on your cushion, on the walking path. Give expecting nothing back in return. It just is this beautiful act of generosity and giving to the Buddha. Why am I sitting down? Because I'm a Buddhist and Buddha asked me to do it, that's all. I'm not expecting jhanas, I'm not expecting any bliss, I'm not expecting psychic powers or enlightenment, I'm just doing this as a kind act of letting go of giving. And if you can do that, you're going to bliss out. Big time. But then you say, well, Ajahn Brahm, I was walking on the path, sitting down, just giving, I never blissed out. That's because you did it trying to bliss out. You've got to do it not expecting anything, not trying to get something. It's real letting go. And that is such a subtle thing to do, but that is called contentment, letting go. And my goodness, that works. So a lot of times people have to be so frustrated before they get to that stage. The last day of the retreat, they got no, oh God, I'm hopeless, I'm just going to give up, I'm just, nothing to do except just sit here, what the hell. And then when you really do that, then you get these incredible meditations. You will find when you do get the best meditations, they're when you least expect it. You know, you'll be, sometimes I've done it, I'm so tired, exhausted. You know, just been teaching all day, so I'll just sit down, nothing else, it's too early to go to bed. I'm going to be really sleepy and I sit there and just don't even try to do anything. Wham, bam, zoom, woo-wee. And all these things happen when you let go. Because this is what the meditation is. It's contentment upon contentment upon contentment. Contentment's a power. And it builds and builds like a fire. And it gets intense. Intense contentment. Incredibly content. Massively content. Beautifully content, and it really just takes over. And you find out it was the wanting which stops me getting anywhere in meditation for the first part. But when I just let go, I was totally content. That's why they have one of the mantras in Thailand. Now, many people know the Buddha mantra, but even better than that was the word for good enough, which was Pordi. That's a word in Thai, meaning Pordi means good enough. So breathing in, Por, breathing out, Di. Or in English we say, good enough. This is good enough. How would you say that in Chinese? Is it a nice, easy word? You don't know Chinese? No, crikey. Okay, well anyway, good enough. So you just chant that to yourself, good, this is good enough, good enough, good enough. So you become contented and easily satisfied. Not proud, not demanding anything, not even jhanas. I mean, it's incredible how happy and how peaceful you can become when you're not trying to concentrate the mind. Because this is the nature of the mind. When you don't want anything, the leaf becomes without wind and starts to settle down, becomes peaceful and still, all by itself. So see how content you can be. When you go to bed at night, I'm content with my bed. You're content with the shower. It's pretty easy to be content with these things. Look at that teddy bear. So content. Never complained at all since it came here. So you could try teddy bear meditation, bear awareness, just being here, contented and so satisfied. Now that's where you can come very, very still. And don't think that you just get dull, because that's not what happens. Because of contentment you build up energy. And it's a beautiful energy, the natural energy of stillness. Sometimes I, again, trying to find similes which work. Sometimes it's like, you know, the simile of life being a journey. And you've been travelling a long time and you're tired. So you want a place to sit down and do nothing and rest. But the trouble is, the only place you can find to sit down and rest is this cold stone bench, which is uneven, so it pokes into your bottom. That's the only place you have. This present moment. Not the best, but it's good enough. So you sit down, sit down on that stone bench, and it pokes into your bottom, and it's really cold and uneven and hard. But you find the longer you sit there, not going anywhere, just being here, the warmer that bench becomes, and the smoother it becomes, and the softer it becomes. And after a few minutes, what started out as a very uncomfortable seat becomes the most luxurious and comfortable place you could ever sit in your life. That's what happens when you stop. Things change. Contentment creates the happiness. If ever you look in the suttas, you find that contentment is an important part of the path. The way the Buddha describes it is that first of all you get some faith in the teachings and then you start, you get some inspiration, then you start keeping your precepts, and the precepts make you happy because they avoid so much problem and suffering in life, you know, when you're sort of restraining yourself and not sort of harming others or harming yourself. And after keeping the precepts, they say you become content. Just content with what you have, not really looking for things in life. And there are two types of materialism. There's the ordinary materialism for things, but there's also spiritual materialism as well. You know, when you want to sort of, you know, have deep meditation, great insights, compare, you know, who's enlightened and who's not, as if there was like, you know, go to university. First of all, you get a bachelor's, and then you get master's, and then you get doctorate with honours and stuff like that. You know, who's got jhana? First, the first jhana with honours, and the second jhana, cum laude. And it doesn't work like that. This is not an honour system. Just like the monks, have you ever seen the monks with different types of robes? You know, you have just another dirty robe for the ordinary monk, and then you get a much finer quality robe when you become, you know, a stream winner. And when you become an arahat, you get a lame robe, which, you know, like the film stars and TV stars wear, which like twinkles because you're an arahat.
Do you have like a medal for the first jhana? Like, you know, I mean, another medal for the second jhana and then the third jhana. Of course, you know, you don't do that because these aren't attainments, these are letting go. And that's one of the great things about the Buddhist tradition. You know, and no one will tell you. You can ask and ask and ask and ask and ask and ask and ask, you know, who's enlightened, who's got jhanas, and the monks will never say. There's a reason for that, because if you become enlightened, or if a stream winner, you're called one of the Aryas. You heard that word before? The Aryas. And we have to be very careful that we don't split up the Sangha between those who are Aryas and those who are not. Otherwise you create what I call the Aryastocracy. These are the good monks, the other ones are riffback. Because that would just... That's just pride, and that misses the whole point of what this is all about. So all these things, you know, sometimes I said you don't know who in this hall has got the meditation. You can't tell. And we don't tell either, so we don't compare. So we think, I am good enough, this is good enough. And when you think like that, you get so peaceful and content. You find out that is the path. You're happy. Peaceful, content, and that happiness just builds. It's the happiness born of stillness, not the happiness born of doing things. The two different types of happiness. The happiness born of stillness, just being here. Or the happiness of going to some destination, reaching some goal, your team winning the cup, you know, finally managing to save up to pay off your mortgage of your house, buying a new diamond necklace or something. I don't know if I told you that story about the... It was Valentine's Day in a couple of days, and the husband, another husband-wife joke, the husband asked his wife, he said, Valentine's Day tomorrow, darling, I want to buy you something, what do you want? She said, no, I don't want anything, you know, just being with you is enough. Men, that's not what she means. She said, no, I want to get you something. He said, oh, okay, darling, thank you. He said, what do you want? He said, something with diamonds in. Because girls like diamonds. So the husband was very kind. The following day, he gave her a present for Valentine's Day. She opened it. You know what it was? A pack of playing cards. Had 13 diamonds in it. Grounds for divorce. but as for us, that's materialism. We also have spiritual materialism, trying to get things, trying to attain things. So please, at this stage of the retreat, you're in the middle, please don't get into the trap of thinking, oh, I've only got a few days, I haven't attained anything yet, I haven't got this, I haven't got that. That's not the way of meditation. Be happy where you are. It's wonderful what you've achieved so far, but it's even more wonderful what you've let go of. So you're just here just to give this time to the Buddha. Not expecting anything, just the fact you're meditating is more than enough. So thank you for that, and just see what happens. Anything else is extra. And my goodness, if that's your attitude, you'll get amazing extras. Sometimes that used to happen. Sometimes you used to buy the cornflakes, not because I like cornflakes, because I wanted the gift inside. So that's what happens when we meditate. We don't want anything, but the gifts come to us for free. So please, look upon contentment and don't try and get things. Just be here. Contented and easily satisfied. Be a visitor. So you've got no business to make your mind any better. It's not your mind anyway. Don't be an owner. Don't be an owner of your body and your mind. Be a visitor. And then you can enjoy it and have incredible peace and understand how meditation really works. Okay. Any questions about the talk? Good? Very good. So there's more interviews this morning for those who want interviews. If you don't need an interview, fine. You can always ask a question on a piece of paper for the evening. I usually prefer it actually on the pieces of paper rather than having personal interviews.
Because it used to happen so often, someone would come up for the interview, they'd ask the question and I'd answer it, and then the next person would come and they'd ask their question, which was exactly the same. And the third person would come and the same question again. And it would be wonderful just to put it on a piece of paper, then one question is asked and everybody hears the answers, and it's far more efficient. So never think that you are special and unique. Sometimes you think that your problems are just no one else is so weird to have my problems. You are all weird. So don't worry about it. Put it on a piece of paper and you can ask it there. And have a beautiful morning. Hopefully you will. We did actually see if we can get some Asian food for you today. I don't know if it will work or not, but you know, if you're really getting desperate, you can actually ask a few of the people who've been here a few times. There is another way. Beta said, don't tell them. But if you can follow some of the oldies and see what they do about 10:30.